You are listening to Cato Oaks Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at Cato Oaks, Richland College, or the DCCD. This afternoon, I just attended the Richland Chronicle meeting that we have every Wednesday, and right after the meeting, I double-check, and I usually do this right before the show, what was on Drudge Report in terms of breaking news. And the Federal Reserve, and I'm going to be covering this in a little bit more detail later, but the Federal Reserve announced that it's not going to be tapering off on its purchases of bonds. In other words, they're going to still be buying Treasury bonds at the tune of $85 billion a month, which is nearly a trillion. Well, not nearly a trillion. It's, let me see, 10 times, 850. It's over $1 trillion still. Now, some of those are, it's split. Some are not only treasuries, but also mortgage-backed securities issued by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, primarily Fannie Mae. That's one point of the announcement. Some were expecting that they would announce tapering. They obviously decided not to do that, which does not surprise me because they indicated that they would remain printing money, and that's what they're doing, or creating credit, or expanding credit. What the term of art that's used is quantitative easing 3, and it's been rather very, very aggressive because they believe that what they're doing with their easy monetary policy, with not only buying these securities, long-term securities, as well as keeping interest, the federal funds rate at near zero at 0.25% or 25 basis points, they said they would keep this policy in place until the unemployment rate, the expected unemployment rate, got down to 6.5%. In other words, their new target, their new rule or new target, and it's not new, they've been doing this for over a year now, is the unemployment rate of 6.5%. In other words, if the unemployment rate would get down to 6.5%, then they would seriously consider tapering or reducing the amount of long-term the amount of Treasury securities that they're buying. So I'm gonna give you my opinions of that in the show, but before I do, there are two areas that I'd like to touch upon, and they're really updates. Two news stories or news events I've been covering for the last 2 days, and on both instances, this is very much an update. I'm not going to review the entire story at all, and one is the shooter at the Washington Naval Yard that he killed 12 people, then was killed by police officers. The stories came out that he was being treated at the Veterans Administration for psychological problems. He had some mental problems. And usually, and I think almost 100% of the time, if he was being treated for a mental condition, he was on drugs. He was going to be prescribed, and that's fairly standard, medications, prescription drugs, most likely antidepressants. And where I'm going with this is if you do an analysis, do a spreadsheet of all the mass killers that have killed, you know, several people before they either committed suicide themselves or were shot by the cops, you know, suicide by cops, almost all of them, not 100%, but most of them were on medications, and many of them on, and it's a certain group of medications called SSRIs, that's selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. I'm not going to get into the science or the chemistry of that at all. I'm not a scientist, but I've read enough and listened enough is that these drugs have serious problems. Even though it's fairly standard to use, doctors subscribe this class of drugs, and I'm not going to mention any brand names, not that I'm reluctant to, but one of the problems, and this is for people that really have severe cases of depression. We're not talking you wake up one day and you're depressed for a day or mild depression. We're talking people that have major big league league diagnosis and are truly depressed. In those situations, these people are given these drugs. And it's a big business, folks. We're talking billions of dollars here. And I've included an article. I haven't posted it yet in terms of my notes, but I will be posting once I edit. I'm almost totally caught up with my editing. I have one show from yesterday that I need to edit, but it's not going to be much because I have an interview. And I kind of remind you, if you're a student here at Richland College, I did interview the professor from the University of Texas at Dallas that gave the Constitutional Day presentation. So that will be at the end of that show. And what I covered yesterday was an update of both the Washington Naval Yard shooter, which I'm doing today, as well as the situation in Benghazi. And I have a little bit more information, but I'll have probably more either on my Thursday or Friday show, and it might even take to Monday. There is some breaking news, but that Congressional Oversight Reform Committee is holding hearings today. Now, getting back to what I'm going to do is give you an update on that Washington Naval Yard shooter, and he apparently was being treated for mental illness. He had a condition, probably depressed. He was hearing voices. He was depressed. He was probably suicidal. He had these rages. But if he went to the Veterans Administration, which his family indicated he did and was being treated, he probably was on this medication. Now, the problem is you usually learn many weeks, if not months later, because they're rather strict laws, you can't disclose the person's medical history. Now, he's dead, so that should not be a legitimate reason. But what was he on, and what were the dosage, and was he taking them? And I assume they're going to do an autopsy. I won't say 100%, but about 99.99% in cases like this, they do an autopsy to determine, was he on prescribed drugs? And part of the problem is this. Sometimes the medication controls the problem. It's good for him, and that's why it's a big business. It works. But like every drug, there are exceptions to it where some people become psychotic, and either they want to commit suicide, that's one of the things that's common, or they go on a rampage like he did, kill people, but really knowing that he'll probably be killed by the cops, or once he's killed several people, he would kill himself if he needs to control that. Now, I'm bringing this up because this is one area that I've heard this angle on the story, if you will, on many of these shootings, but it's usually not emphasized, if brought up at all, by your major television networks. The focus almost invariably is either on guns. They're the problem. Guns are the problem. No, guns are not the problem. Guns don't kill people. People kill people. Or video games are the problem. Video games are not the problem. But let me give you the deadly mixture of a cocktail. You already have a person that has a personality disorder. He has some problems, mental problems. He seeks treatment. He knows enough about his condition that he knows he needs help. He's hearing voices in his head. Some of these people are paranoid. He thinks people are following him or projecting messages into his brain. They truly believe that, even though if you spoke to him, you know that's crazy. So a lot of these shooters, they were known to have mental problems, and many, if not all of them, were on medication. Now here's the problem. Sometimes what triggers this event is they don't take their meds. They don't take their medication. Point one. Point two is either the dosage, prescribed dosage by the doctor, is either been increased or decreased. And then they have this episode where they go killing people or killing themselves. Or they've been switched to another medication. You see, there are several possibilities here. But given all I've said, and there's ample evidence of this, the television networks don't focus on this. They tend to focus in on the guns. That's the primary focus. The common denominator is they have an assault rifle or a pistol or a shotgun. That's what's killing people. That's what's killing our children. We have to take the guns away from the American people. Well, that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's utter and complete nonsense. Guns don't kill people. And more gun laws are not going to stop crazy people from stealing guns or trying to get a hold of guns to do whatever they are trying to do. The focus should be on the individual, and the focus should be on how is he being treated. Does he have a mental condition? And most of them do. Something's wrong in their life. And many, not all, but many of them seek help. They know they're sick. They seek help, and what they get is medications, prescribed medications. These medications are a contributing cause, if not the cause, of their psychotic episodes, where they suddenly decide to go out and shoot or kill people, whether it's in a school or in a naval base or in a movie theater. Something snaps, and sometimes it could be because they didn't take their medication, or finally they've taken it for so long that it results in where they're either suicidal or homicidal. They want to kill people. Or both. They want to kill people, and after they kill people, they'll kill themselves, or they will have the cop kill them. But the focus is seldom, if ever, on the drugs. And that is, as far as I'm concerned, is the major contributing factor that results in these rampages. If they didn't have access to a gun, they would use a baseball bat or a knife or their own fist. The drugs are the problem, not the only problem, but the major problem, because that's a big common denominator in all these mass killings, big-time denominator. And I wish that the mainstream media, your corporate media, would look at this in detail. They have the resources. They can go through the major mass killings, identify the number of people killed, number of people injured. Were these people being treated for a mental illness or not? Many of them are treated. And if they were being treated for mental illness, what was the diagnosis? You know, depression is a common one. And what were they given? They're usually given antidepressants that fall in the category of the SSRI drugs. See, I feel the drugs are the problem. There are millions of law-abiding Americans that use their weapons, whether it's a rifle, a shotgun, or a pistol, for various reasons. Some just for the fun of it. They like target shooting. Some like hunting. But many, many Americans want that weapon, and typically it's a pistol, to protect themselves against someone breaking into their home or apartment. So they not only can protect themselves, they can protect their families, they can protect their property as well. And there have been home invasions where like a gang or several people would break into someone's house. There's no way an individual can defend themselves against that. And many a times these home invasions lead to either a beating or raping. And unfortunately, they don't want witnesses. They kill them. So the American people, thank God, have the Second Amendment, which allows them to bear arms. And many people have taken advantage of that in the sense that they've gone to the trouble of going out, buying a weapon, typically a pistol, sometimes a rifle or a shotgun. Some have gotten training for it, I would hope, and most do. And then they at least have something to protect themselves as well as their family and loved ones against any type of break-in by a person. It could be one or more people breaking in. It's usually someone robbing the place. You wake up at night and you hear someone downstairs. You hear noises downstairs, and it's obviously someone breaking in. You typically would go to your cell phone and very, very quietly call 911. But before I did that, I would make sure that I had my weapon in hand, the safety being off, and being ready in case the person that is downstairs decides to look to see what's available upstairs. And see, that's what I get very, very upset when every time we have what I would call a mass murder, a multiple murder, we're talking more than three or four people, immediately it's like a knee-jerk reaction. We have to control the guns. We have to take the people's guns away. Look what it's causing. Well, that's not good enough for me. And it's not good enough for millions of Americans. You know, many people live in rural areas. You can't rely on the cops. And even if you live in a big city like Dallas, if you call and you just pick the wrong time and there's some major crime incident occurring, it might take half an hour or an hour before the police show up. And by then you probably, let's say it's someone breaking into your house, might be seriously injured, if not killed. Yeah, it'd be nice if I could depend on the police. But the reality is, especially in rural areas or even suburbs, you can't. You have to be able to defend yourselves, and most people can't do that physically. So they have a weapon, and that weapon is usually a pistol, a shotgun, a rifle. It's largely driven what they can afford. You know, it's not inexpensive to buy a weapon, a rifle or a pistol. It does require upkeep, and it also requires training, proficiency, where you go to a range, usually a gun club, or maybe even a gun store, and practice. Like everything, you need to practice to get good at it. But the focus invariably is on the guns and taking people's guns away. Seldom, I'm not saying always, but seldom is the focus on the drugs these people are taking. They'll mention that he's been having psychological problems or mental problems, and he's being treated. But they seldom take it the next step. Okay, he's being treated. Well, what was the condition? And what was he being treated with? And invariably, it's drugs. And that's what disturbs me, because many of these drugs, not everyone, but for many people, these drugs literally set them off. You don't want to be in the same room with them where that's happened. It's that simple. So let's focus, at least for a minute, on the drug situation. And that's what I'm asking the major television networks to do. Why don't they do it? It's very, very simple. Not too long ago, probably a year ago, I had an assignment to listen to a half an hour of a program on any network. I could pick them. But I wasn't to listen to the program content. I was to listen to the commercials and write down, you know, what type of commercials were common. Now, what I found, or at least for this particular network at a certain time in the day. Most of the commercials tended to fall in three major categories. One, there were a lot of gold commercials, you know, buy gold, or financial service-related commercials, and call it an investment, if not gold in some other investment-grade item. The second one was food. Come to my restaurant. So there were a lot of food commercials. Some were to eat at restaurants. Some were to go to the grocery store and buy it. But the third category was drugs, both prescription drugs as well as drugs where you didn't need to buy anything. That's where the money's at. And that's the point I'm trying to make. These drug advertisements, first of all, it's big business. The drug companies don't really want to do advertising if they don't think they need it or it's not effective. Well, the reason why you see it over and over again, you better believe it's effective. They get their message out and they get new clients. And so does the pharmaceutical companies. And it's not only over the counter, it's also prescription drugs. So the government, why it regulates all this, and a lot of this advertising, there'll be long disclaimers that they'll read rather quickly, and it comes in small print. The television networks need those ads because advertising revenue is down. So I'm not saying they would take anything. And I'm sure, for example, the Richland Chronicle is not going to publish anything. National news media, they need the money to operate, and they will take the money of the companies that actually make these drugs. And that's why it's important to any operation, including a television network, to be profitable, to grow. Because if you're profitable and growing, you can add more programs, you can hire more people. So there's a great reluctance to really do a thorough investigative journalist piece on the drug impact as a cause, if not the primary cause, of the killings of innocent people. Their fear is, if they did such a piece, there would be such an outrage against them that they would never be in a position to expand. They want those revenues to keep coming in. They have an addiction, and they have an addiction to certain, they need advertisement. They all have that problem. And one of the sources, major sources of money, is advertisers, pharmaceutical companies, that want to earn revenue from their sale. And that's why I think it's not covered. And in future shows, I'm going to dig more into it. I really have just scratched the surface. I have not given you all, I haven't really described how these drugs work. And to be fair to them, in many cases, there is no problem. It actually helps the person. You see, you can't jump to the conclusion, well, the answer to this problem is simple. Close the gate. No, I don't think that's the solution at all, because these drugs help a lot of people. And the reason why these firms are recruiting, you know, like former senators, is that once they retire, the networks, as far as I can see, don't want to do a in-depth analysis and review of this problem at all. They take the easy way out and blame it on guns. A secondary cause is video games. The problem with video games, there are literally tens of thousands to millions of people playing the same video games that never have any violent outrage or go on a rampage like that. That's a hard sell. And there are some people that spend all day and all night till they really are totally exhausted before they stop playing. That's how addicted these games can be, and I believe it. Now, I'm not a gamer, but I have played games, and it's most of these games are subtle but effective in ensuring you keep playing. But I view games as more or less a contributing factor. Think of it as a cocktail where you have games, you have the gun, but in many cases that gun is stolen, so a new law isn't going to help you. And where they have a gun and they're displaying it in public, then they are captured. They get very, very tired. They're taking these medications. They get confused. And before you know it, they wake up and go on a rampage. So it's a mixture. They have a mental condition. They're being treated for it by a drug that works many, many times, but for various reasons doesn't. And it may not be the drug's fault. It may be the simple reason the person forgot to take his medication. Or if he did take his medication, took the wrong dosage, either too much or too little. More and more attention needs to be focused in on what I'm seeing is a very common denominator where the person is on prescribed medication, and you might have taken too much, too little, or stopped, or his prescription was changed to another drug. You see, unless it's fairly carefully monitored, and most people can't really do that, you're going to get and continue to get the results we've had. It might be every year or so, but you're going to have another mass killer. He's out there, and it's going to happen. And there's very little you and I can do to prevent it. However, if we started our attention and gave the resources instead of spending all the time and resources trying to take people's guns away by advertising that position, by certain political parties making that a key position. Instead of doing that, we really focus, what is best for the person that has this problem? And the first thing is to admit that these SSRI drugs, these so-called psychiatric drugs, there is a definite connection to mass shootings. It's not 100%. Seldom is it 100%. And I wish we'd really start a conversation on that, and a lot of people get a lot smarter on it, and to see what changes we can do to alleviate this problem. Because it is a problem that really needs to be addressed. And I wish the mainstream, so-called mainstream media would focus its attention on this. I seriously doubt they will. I could be surprised, but I don't think anything's gonna happen. The networks get just too much money from the drug companies. So this is going to continue with more and more outcries. Every time there's a killing, especially if it involves children, there'll be senators, representatives, even the president. We must have more gun control laws. More laws isn't going to stop this. They know it, and I know it. Usually the people either borrow or steal the weapons they use from their own families or friends, or steal them. or buy them from other criminals, kind of worst case. But they usually get them from friends, relatives, family. And it's a deadly combination. It's the fact that they're getting very, very tired. They're obsessing on a game. They're playing over and over again. Fatigue sets in, and then the drugs have their effect, either positively or negatively, and before you know it, where you have a negative situation or consequence, people end up dead. So that's is about as specific as I want to be at in terms of this show. In future shows, as I learn a little bit more about the drugs, I'll be a little bit more specific as to not only what drugs are the problem, but look at the dosages that people are being treated at. Sometimes a dosage can be very low and it works. Sometimes they need to increase the dosage. And usually when that happens, it's either going to improve the situation or radically deteriorate the situation. So you got to be careful when you're changing dosages, and you also have to be careful when you're changing medications. Okay, enough said. I will pick it up in future shows, but I wanted to add that. I do have some videos on it, as well as one or two interesting articles that would get you up to speed. And I urge you to read those articles and look at several of the videos. Now, let's talk for a minute, and probably not more than a minute or just a couple of minutes. I was anticipating that we would have public televised hearings of the House Subcommittee on Oversight and Reform on Benghazi. They're having those hearings, and my understanding, they've had them, but nothing has been televised yet, or nothing is, let me be more precise, nothing has been put on YouTube yet. But I still maintain something's going to break. Now, they've issued a report that's critical of the ARB, the Accountability Review Board, the ARB. You'll hear that term probably about half the time, that the government's Department of State, the government's Accountability Review Board, determined that what the Accountability Review Board looked into was the Benghazi situation. Now, a couple of points. They didn't keep transcripts. They questioned people, but they didn't keep transcripts. The people were not under oath. So you don't have a record. You don't have a record. Also, they didn't question Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. That's the top person there. So I know that the Oversight Committee is critical of the fact that there were certain conflicts on the people involved, and they deliberately did not get to the top echelons, if you will, of the State Department. More details will come out. And it's important that they come out. But the my problem with it is still doesn't go to some of the key questions. Why was Ambassador Stevens there? My own opinion, the ambassador position was cover for him to head a mission of the CIA that was engaged in a covert operation. And that covert operation was to gather up weapons as well as fighters. And when you get enough of them, ship it on either a ship or an airline to Turkey for transshipment into Syria. That was their mission, as well as to gather intelligence and probably interrogate some of the al-Qaeda members that were in Libya. That needs to be brought out. It needs to be on the record. But what we also need to know, and hopefully either today or tomorrow, the end of the week, or maybe even the first part of next week, there were a number of people, CIA and State Department, that were there and know, that truly knows what happened. We haven't heard from him yet. We have not heard from those people yet. And we need to. We really do need to hear from those people. And what I was suspecting hasn't come true yet, that we will. It might be today, it might be tomorrow, it might be next week. The one person, and I'll save this for probably a future show, either Monday or Tuesday. There is one person that hasn't testified, and it's a key person. He was a Department of State security person. They protect, for example, ambassadors. They're special agents, and that's their job, the protection of diplomatic personnel, including ambassadors, but anyone working for the Department of State. And there's one individual that was severely wounded, but was in on both attacks in the sense of defending against, first, the consul. He came to the rescue of the people at the diplomatic facility. And that is where, that was the one that was set afire, and where their and the ambassador died of asphyxiation, as well as the computer information expert was also killed because of that reason. So he was there protecting the people there, but he and was definitely involved in moving those people from that location to the CIA annex. That's where he came from. But he joined the two people that were killed to go on the roof of several, on one building of in the annex. And what happened is, this was a planned, professional, you know, well-executed attack where a person with knowledge of truly know how to operate a mortar was firing mortar shells down on this Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, annex. And that's where an additional two Americans were killed as a direct result of those mortars going off against and hitting these people that were on the roof. And two of them died, and one was severely, severely injured. And he's been, it was so bad that he's spent almost a year in the hospital, not only with operations, but also with therapy to get back on his feet. That person we have not heard from. That would be a key person that if I were in the State Department or the CIA, or for that matter, the House Oversight Committee, I would want to hear his that person's testimony. Hopefully we will. I'm still having my doubts, but I think he wants to tell a story. And I'll tell you why he wants to tell a story. He was wounded severely. His leg was severely wounded. And it was over 20 hours before anyone came to him and rescued him. He was on the roof of one of the buildings in the CIA annex. And they were crying. They sent out requests for help. And unfortunately, no help came, because orders were given to stand down. He is definitely, in my mind, I won't say the, but one of the few people that I really want to hear from. You know, and initially, why were you there? Who were you guarding? That all needs to come out, and I'm hoping that it will later this week or early next week or sometime in the future. Because we're over a year. We had the anniversary of this attack last week. It's been a year, yet the Congressional Oversight Committees, as well as other committees, that you have the House Judiciary Committee is involved with this, the Armed Services Committee has some jurisdictional issues, House Intelligence Committees. All this testimony should be on the record, and Congress should have an opportunity to ask the questions. And I'm hoping that this individual will be asked to testify and hopefully will testify in public. I think it'll be riveting in terms of television, but at least he would have known that, well, that person is definitely a hero. And I think the American people owe him an explanation as to why the President of the United States and the people under him were so slow to respond. I think that's completely unconscionable. And I've said it in a previous show, and I'm saying it again, and I'm hoping that he might be testifying right now or even Friday or Monday. I look forward to that person's testimony. I don't know what he's going to say, but I know he's the one person that can truly give an accurate assessment of the people that were attacking both the embassy facility as well as the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, annex. And that's about as much as I want to add now. So I've given you my update as far as Benghazi. I've been giving you my update as far as the shootings at the Washington Naval Yard. I'm going to spend, probably 15, 20 minutes at most going over that breaking story of the Federal Reserve and what they're doing. In about 1 month, about 4 weeks from now, if we're lucky, if the Treasury Secretary gets it out, we will know what the deficit, in other words, how much money did the government spend that you don't have. The size of the deficit will be known because the fiscal year for 2013 ends September 30th. And usually by the eighth business day, the Department of Treasury publishes their MTS, their monthly Treasury statement, that gives you the visibility into how the government spends their money by department, by category, by totals, as well as how much tax revenue they've collected. And when you have those two key bits of information, you can determine that your outlays are going to be in far excess of your revenue. So the federal government, again, is going to run a deficit. I think it could be anywhere from $700 billion to the high $900 billion. I think they're going to try to keep it under $1 trillion. But it's still huge. It still means government spending is out of control. And what it means is whatever that deficit is, we had to borrow money to pay for those bills because we were short. Our revenues were less than our total spending. And the reason is very simple. We have this congressional baseline budgeting. So whatever was in your budget last year, typically this year you'll get just a little bit more. That's sort of the game that's being played here. So the government has been running these massive deficits. And I've said this many, many times. All the Federal Reserve is doing is enabling that. See, they're the only financial institution in the United States. They are our central bank that has the capability of creating money. And they've been doing that month after month after month with the so-called quantitative easing. I like what they're doing is creating, I call them DEM, digital electronic money. Someone sits as a keyboard, and if someone wants to sell them Treasury securities, you know, they go through the game. It's not coming directly from the Treasury. But what's going on is the Treasury sells it typically to a dealer in these securities, and the dealer in turn sells it to the Federal Reserve. That's how they can say, well, we didn't buy it directly from the Treasury Department. We actually bought it from another financial institution. But that's not really, that's sort of like a shadow, what do you call it? A shadow buyer. What the Federal Reserve has been doing over these years is financing the federal government. And the numbers add up. What the Federal Reserve has been doing is every month buying $85 billion of security. You can do the math. Multiply that by 10, you get $850 billion. Two more months is 170. So you can see you're a little over $1 trillion, which is $1,000 billion. A little over $1 trillion. That is the deficit. Now the question is this year, do we need the full amount? Probably not, because the deficit, like I said, will probably be somewhere between $700 billion and $1 trillion, or $1,000 billion, if you will. But we got to wait until mid-October to really find exactly what that number is. And that will continue. And it will continue up to the point that inflation suddenly becomes rampant again. It breaks out. And the Federal Reserve System then is forced to make its first priority the control of inflation. That is really should be its primary mission. I am not for tool rules. I'm very much for economists have a responsibility. Well, the American people need to understand what's going on. And what the Fed is doing is that it's enabling the federal government to pay its bills. And they're arbitrarily keeping interest rates low. That helps the Treasury keep interest rate on the debt low. It also helps people that are in the market for a mortgage. But the primary reason they're doing this, and you got to cut through all the BS, is to finance the federal government's shortfall in revenues. It's that simple. Now, some of it is not Treasury securities. It's buying up bonds of Fannie Mae. And they're partly responsible for the state of mortgage lending today in the United States. You see, I think the Federal Reserve, our central bank, is going to be pursuing quantitative easing for several more years. They're saying, well, it could end sometime in 2014 towards the end. It's not going to happen, because if we go into recession, that's going to automatically extend the date when the unemployment rate hits 6.5%. What they're saying is that the unemployment rate could hit 6.5% sometime next year. And I'm not saying it couldn't, but it wasn't due to more and more jobs being created. It would be due to, like it is so far, more and more people becoming so discouraged that they leave the labor force. And that's what I'm trying to warn you. As inflation comes roaring back, and we're not there, we're not close yet, but it will happen. The Fed is going to have to reverse course. It's going to have to change its monetary policy from an easy one to a very tight one, if it truly believes that its mission is to control inflation, namely price stability. Now, remember, Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke, I believe, has told the president he wants to retire. I can understand why, and a lot of people want him to retire. I'm not a fan of quantitative easing. I think it's the wrong policy. It is really monetarism, but it's a form of Keynesianism, that the problem is we don't have enough consumption. Therefore, the government, either through government spending or easy monetary policy, needs to increase the individual's consumption, make interest rates very low so people will go out and borrow some money and then spend their money. You see, the recovery from a recession, let me back up. I'm not saying this right. You need to have a recessionary period to reallocate resources. And what the Federal Reserve has done, as well as what the federal government done, is forestall that from happening. They've delayed it, they've delayed it, they've delayed it. What they're doing is very much what I would call a command and control situation, where the Federal Reserve, your central bank, who's responsible for monetary policy, and their policy is to keep the federal funds rate low and credit easy. And that's why they are buying. See, when they buy bonds, what do? They create money. They exchange. They buy the bonds. The bond becomes an asset of the Federal Reserve's portfolio. And in exchange for that, they get cash. And that doesn't mean currency. They get a credit that they can take to their bank and deposit. And that's what's happening. But at some point, there is a day of reckoning. It's not in the distant future. And I see it's sort of a repeat of the late 70s, early 80s. You've probably heard the term history repeats itself. I think we're going to get a repeat, unfortunately, of that time period, and which means higher and higher rates of inflation. It means unemployment. And when you have higher and higher rates of inflation, the purchasing power of everyone's money decreases. It's not going to be pretty, folks. We're going to see today we have very high rates of inflation. Very high rates of unemployment. What you don't want is a period of stagflation where you have very low growth rates that result in very low increases of the people employed, combined with higher and higher prices. That is a situation that, like I said, you don't want to happen, because it could lead to civil unrest, because people will be unemployed for many, many years, not weeks or months, years, can't find a job. And the little money, if any, they have left buys fewer and fewer goods and services. I'm looking at the time. I'm going to wrap it up, and I'll say this. I am tired, and I really, there are at least several segments of the show that my mind wandered. I won't say falling asleep, but I was on the verge. And I normally try not to be in that kind of condition. This is really the first time that I've been this tired and have been almost nodding off. So I want to at least have a brief apology. I will edit out, to the best of my ability, those brief digressions that probably don't make much sense. There have only been two or three of them, but that's not acceptable. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise indicated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Tomorrow I'll come in sharp as a knife. I'll really get my act together, if you will, get a really good night's sleep, and hopefully catch up completely on all the postings. I'm really only one behind, but I'm really tired. I'm debating whether to go home and then come in, but that means I can't edit, not this show, last show, and I really need to get caught up there, and I need to finish an article. But I hope you enjoyed today's show, and now back to the music.